Good afternoon, everybody. The title of my presentation is Aquifer Transportation and Irrigation Algorithms in Hydrologic Modeling, Present Status and Opportunities. I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, Drs. Gary Marek, Louis Baumart, David Brower, and Steve Witt, who are my colleagues at USDA ARS Lab in Bushland, Texas, and Dr. Laura Jahuja, who is the research leader in Agricultural Systems Unit in Fort Collins, Colorado. Some of the things that I'm going to discuss today is based on my experience in the last 20 years. From 1996 to 2005, I was a hydrologic modeler. Then I changed my hat and I became an ET researcher when Dr. Terry Howell hired me as an agriculture engineer in Bushland, Texas. Just to give a little bit introduction, there are numerous hydrologic models available that can be used at different scales, from field to watershed to continental scales. These models are used for evaluating effects of crop, nutrient, and land use management practices on runoff, water quality, crop yield. These models are also used for TMDL development to satisfy the Water Quality Act requirements. And these models are also recently used for climate change research to see the effect of climate change on water availability and crop water demand, and also for looking at carbon sequestration. I mentioned few models here. These models are commonly used in the U.S. SWAT, EPIC, ADAPT, DrainMod, GLEAMS, APEX, Roots Water Quality Model, MIKE-SHE. These models range from field to watershed to continental scale models. If you look at the history, these models are developed during 1980s and later early part of 1990s. After that, development stopped. I think you can guess why development stopped, because there's no funding. USDA decided that we're not going to spend any money on modeling anymore. So you don't see a lot more development after that period. Because of that, there are some shortcomings that goes with these models. I'm going to talk about three issues related to hydrologic modeling: ET, irrigation, and crop yield predictions. If you look at these hydrologic models, there are some of the commonly used ET algorithms in these models are Penman-Monte, my favorite one, then Fritz-Taylor, Argus method, Ritchie method. There are several other methods. These models incorporate them in there, and you have different options to use them when you are running these models. For estimating potential ET, these models require weather data that includes rainfall, irrigation application, solar radiation, air temperature, wind speed, and relative humidity. These are standard inputs. And also they use the leaf area index to calculate the actual ET from the potential ET. And the way they input this information is some of these models have embedded database, crop parameter database, that were incorporated during the development stages of it. And there's not much update on these databases. So from this data set, you can get a potential ET for any given crop. From that, you can calculate the actual ET. The way they do that is they take the leaf area index, then they apply correction or adjustment factor to these based on the drought and wet stresses. And then using that, they calculate the actual ET from potential ET. If there is no stress to the crop, then you can actually assume that actual ET is equal to potential ET. The problem with this approach is, as I mentioned earlier, these models were developed during early 1990s, and after that funding stopped, and there was not much measured data to test these models. So there was some testing, but not comprehensive testing. And when you're developing a model, first one you're developing is the ET algorithm in it. That's the basic algorithm that you need for the water budget. And the adjustment they came up with for the leaf area index to calculate the actual ET, they may not be realistic. These are empirical based on some limited tests that they have done in their locations. Recently, we ran the SWOT model. I just want to demonstrate what are the problems with these models. In this case, I am using the SWOT model. We ran the SWOT model using our lace emitter data set. I'm located in Bushland, Texas. We manage four large lace emitters. Two lace emitters are managed under irrigated condition, 100% irrigation, and two under dryland conditions. The irrigated ones we use for crop coefficient development. So we manage these crops in no stress environment to develop the crop coefficient. Actually, model did a very good job for the irrigated condition. If you look at it, except this one year, the remaining years it actually gave us a very good result. And then we wanted to know why it did not work well for this this year, which is cotton, irrigated cotton. So when we looked at the leaf array index, this is the predicted leaf array index, and this is the measured leaf array index. So the model overestimated the leaf array index. Because of that, it overestimated the ET. So if you fix the leaf array index, then you're going to get a right number. So why the model is overestimating here, but not for the other years? It is an irrigated cotton. It's an indeterminate crop, and it has an auto-irrigation function in it. So we are growing the crop in a no-stress environment. So we said, okay, whenever there is a need for water, you go and apply. So what it did was, there is no input or a requirement for us to add there in the input that when do we stop the irrigation. See, if you are growing irrigated cotton, you're going to stop sometime around irrigation around the first week of August or second week of August to stress the crop so that crop stop growing and make a ball out of it and get some yield out of it. But in this case, it was go on applying irrigation. So plant was growing very well at the end until the harvesting date, and that's what we got. So because of that, we are over-predicting the ET there. So another problem with some of these models are, it only takes like a 3 points on the leaf, like let's say that you don't want to use the embedded crop database in those models. You want to input yourself. But those models don't allow you to put an entire crop growth, the leaf array index for the entire growth period from planting to harvest. It only allows you to 3 points. One, beginning of the planting, close to the very planting date, and then one very close to the maximum leaf array index. If you don't select these points in the right way when you're inputting the data yourself, you're going to get a wrong number again. But some models allows you to input this data for more than 10 points where you can actually construct the curve very nicely. Okay, this is for the dry land. For the irrigated lace emitter fields, as I said, we grew those crops in a non-stress environment. Model worked great except for the cotton. But during the in the dry land conditions, model didn't do a good job at all. In every case, we had an issue there with leaf array index. So we never got a good result for the dry land. What I'm trying to say is, when you're running this model for irrigated fields, you're going to get a good number with most models. But when you're trying to run it for dry land or deficit irrigated ones, you got a problem. You have to be very careful about that. So let's look at the auto-irrigation. Some of these models don't have any irrigation option. Some models have some kind of auto-irrigation option or irrigation option where you can irrigate based on percentage of ET demand. You can do that 100% irrigation, or you can say, I'm only applying 90% of the ET demand. But the moment you say some percentage of the demand, what happens is there are different ways of irrigating it. Some people may irrigate early in the season. Some people like to keep that water for the later in the season. But these models don't allow you to do that. So it's very difficult to evaluate deficit irrigation impact on the crop yield or the crop water demand or groundwater requirements, all that. We have to be very careful when you are using that. The other one is the date of last irrigation event. as I mentioned earlier, in terms of, in the case of cotton, you need to know when to stop the irrigation. Otherwise, it will be growing the crop until the last day of harvesting. And you don't, in reality, you don't get any yield there. You just get the leaves there. Some of the limitations. As I mentioned earlier, different crops have different irrigation requirements. Users should be aware of that. And the other thing model does is they assume unlimited pumping capacity. See, when you turn on these auto irrigation options, it assumes that there's unlimited amount of water I can apply whenever I want, whatever the rate I want. In reality, it's not the case. So we have to have some option of including those information, what is our pumping capacity in those locations. And as I said, deficit irrigation is a different strategies, but we don't have the option to do those in most of these models. The yield algorithm. Inputs for estimating the yield in these hydrologic models are leaf area index, crop height, and then the potential yield, or a relative or potential yield. The way they calculate the yield is you adjust the leaf area index based on the stresses, whether it's a dry or a wet stress, and then you calculate the plant biome as a function of the leaf area index, and then the crop yield as a function of the biomass within the limit of the potential yield. So if you got a wrong leaf area index, you got it wrong in every stages of it, including the water quality. Limitations. The crop growth databases in these models are obsolete. As I mentioned earlier, they were embedded in early 1990s. Some models corrected to some extent, but still most of the information there is obsolete. Just to give an example, present-day corn that you see today is completely different from the corn that you saw in 1990s. And the other thing we need to be aware of is the maximum leaf area input that we are giving into the model. If you are using a standard database, you got one value for corn, but if you are looking in Texas pipelines, your maximum leaf area index for corn is about 5 to 7 meters square by meter square. But if you are running the same model in Midwest, it's 3 to 5 meters square by meter square. But you got one value sitting in there, so you have to be really carefully looking at those values, you know, what exactly the model is doing, otherwise you're going to go wrong in there. Again, the adjustment to the leaf area index based on the plant stress, those are empirical, they don't work very well. And crop yield is a function of the leaf area index. The other thing happening simultaneously is we are getting new varieties of crop every other year. You know, until the, 2000 or early part of the last decade, you know, you used to have the same crop for 10, 15 years. Nowadays, you get new varieties every other year. So your crop production functions are changing. At the same time, our understanding of the water management is improving, so we are doing a better job, both of them together affecting our crop yield functions, but the crop yield function that we have in these models are obsolete. They are very old. Those need to be changing all the time. So that sometimes it's time-consuming and also it costs a lot of money. So with all that limitations, the way we do modeling nowadays is we take the model, we calibrate and validate with 1 to 20 or 25 years of data set, and then we say model is doing a good job after correcting a lot of things, and then we are going to run this model for the next 100 years using historical climate data or using the output from the downscaled output from the GCM models, and then assume that everything is doing, we are doing well. But I can understand to some extent the calibrated soil parameters that we use in this modeling are okay, but are these calibrated crop parameters valid? Because those are specific to each year. We cannot assume that we did a calibration here and he gave us a good result, now the model is doing a good job. That may have a different impact. And we may get results that are unrealistic, and we use those predictions for policy development. Some opportunities. The leaf area index, it may not be available all the time. Sometimes it costs more money. Sometimes they did not collect the data for whatever the reason. So instead of that, nowadays you get these satellite data. They are very high resolution, 1 meter, 2 meter, 4 meter, to all the way to 250 meter data that you can get almost on a daily basis. And most of the data is free. Even if you have to pay, I think the cost of this data is going down rapidly. So at the same time, the models, leaf index models that are remote sensing based, in 20 years back, they used to be really bad. But nowadays, you actually get a very good result with these models. So we may be able to use these models to improve our leaf area index prediction. You can use it as an input, or you can use those as an observed data to verify our modeling results. In that way, we know that we are getting a good results. The other option is, these models are not doing a good job in terms of ET. If you want to change it, it costs a lot of money, time consuming, all that. But there are new methods, remote sensing methods, where you can actually derive ET more accurately. So you can use this data as an observation or as an input. As an observation, you can verify your modeling for predictions and make sure that your modeling you are doing a good job, or you can just take those numbers and put it in the model and bypass your ET algorithm altogether. In that way, you may improve your results. So this is a time series data set. George has a presentation on Wednesday. He's going to talk about how to derive time series data from this remote sensing data set. This is one of the examples that we worked on in Oklahoma. These models are very complex in nature, and it takes a lot of effort to learn them and implement them. So what we did was we developed a software. It is user friendly. Anybody who has no experience with remote sensing whatsoever, with 3-4 hours of training, they can actually derive ET remote sensing maps from the remote sensing data sets. And we will be releasing this software very soon. It's open to everybody at no cost. The other way of doing this is linking models. Instead of trying to improve your own models, try to take some crop growth models and you link them. In that way, you're actually growing a crop, you're simulating a crop growth. Instead of using some kind of a crop growth database, putting into the data in your model, one example would be root zone water quality model. They're linked with the DSAT. Actually, I thought it's a great idea, and we can solve a lot of these problems. And in addition to that, when you're especially simulating model for climate change effects, actually this can be a good option. We also, in collaboration with USDA lab in El Reno and Temple, we are developing an energy balance between ET, SWAT, and MOT flow linkage, where you can get ET from the remote sensing, feed that to SWAT model, and then you get the recharge or infiltration below the root zone that you feed that to a MOT flow. In that way, you get a continuous process, and also you get a better water balance predictions. In summary, be aware of the shortcomings of the model that you are using. Otherwise, you may get the good result for the wrong reason sometime, and sometime wrong results for the wrong reasons. And verify, cross-verify your results with more than one. Nowadays, what happens is most people have a flow or a runoff data at the edge of the field or edge of the watershed outlet, and then they run the model. And then they compare with that. If they are getting a good result with, in comparison with the measured flow, they assume that the entire balance is great. And now they are trying to estimate recharge and impact of groundwater availability and all that. But I think that's the wrong way to go. The advances in remote sensing gave us some more opportunity to feed the data into these models so that we can improve the results. In terms of the irrigation algorithms, I think we need better algorithms in almost all the models that we know. In fact, we have an effort in bushland, we are working on it. If we have time, I'll take some questions.